The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today, our guest is Mary Davey. Mary Davey is the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Integrated Technology Services in GSA's Federal Acquisition Service. Mary is responsible for overseeing the delivery of $23.5 billion in acquisition services to federal agency customers around the world for purchase of information technology and professional services, service SAN solutions. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Mary, you know, when we talk to our guests, we always like to begin with their background. So virtually all successful women we speak to had a big influence growing up. Tell us, what is yours?
So I actually grew up in GSA in college and just had people that I worked with and worked for that turned into real leaders and mentors for me. And I think it really inspired me. You know, coming out of college, I really had no idea what I wanted to do. And having worked in GSA during college and gotten exposure to people that I worked with that really embraced me as a team member, I think really did inspire me to, you know, want to be there, to want to work with them, and to really, you know, want to learn about what that organization did. And what kind of role that I could play. And so I think for me, just having those kind of people around me really early in my career really, you know, just led me to want to also become a leader and just, you know, continue to kind of work with them and work in that kind of environment.
Now, Mary, your family has a long history of public service, correct?
Yes. So all over. My father, my stepmother are both career NASA. My sister's at NASA. I have an uncle and a my mother were actually CIA. I've got a grandfather in the State Department, a grandfather at Department of Treasury. So, yeah, just all the entire family has been, you know, federal service. And I don't know that that inspired me, but it's something that I was used to being around.
So, Mary, your undergraduate degrees are in business finance and then business management. So it sounds like you knew from early on that you wanted a career very much like you've got now. What made you decide to study business?
So that's a fun question. When I got to Virginia Tech, I had really no idea what I wanted to study. And so some of the other women in the dorm were business majors. And I said, well, I guess I could go check that out. So I did. And very quickly really got to like, you know, both the management aspect as well as kind of the business finance, the financial aspect. About my third year at Virginia Tech, I decided maybe I should change into a building construction degree because I really started to get into engineering and just met some people that were in that field. So I went and I talked to the building construction school, which is a very small school in the School of Architecture at Virginia Tech. And they said, you know, we're a tiny little college, essentially. We don't have a lot of women. We'd love to have you, but it's such a technical field. You're going to have to start over as a freshman. And I said, you know, I don't think I can do that. I'm already 3 years into this. So I stuck with business. And the interesting thing is my role right now and throughout my career at GSA, because we're not appropriated and we're fee for service, you've got to have a good, strong business background and financial management skills. So, you know, I run the organization sort of like a business, right? I've got business volume projections I'm supposed to meet. I have expenses. I've got to look at, you know, income. I have to look at investments, the bottom line, you know, for about 11 different business lines. So that has served me really well. And I think partially too why I've stayed in GSA is because it is, you know, run very differently than, you know, an appropriated organization.
Today, we're talking with Mary Davey, Assistant Commissioner of GSA. Mary, you began, as you mentioned, your career at GSA in the late 80s.
Yes.
What was your first job there?
My very first job as a college student was kind of an assistant to the secretary, you know, the admin assistant at the time. And you would find me in the front office of the commissioner in blue jeans, collating papers on the floor. And I remember the first day that this commissioner walked in And I was probably all of 17 or 18. I must have been about 19 years old. And I was in the floor and, you know, got papers everywhere. And he said, "Who are you and what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm collating papers," you know, and I had no idea, you know, what these people really did. But the interesting part about the group, it was the FedSIM organization, which is still around today, one of the groups I ended up running later in my career. And they had just come out of the Air Force, and it was a very unique group of modeling and simulation engineers and experts. And what happened was they were doing a lot of this kind of work for other federal agencies, and the workload became more than that small group could handle themselves, so they started to contract some of it out. And that's how we really grew the assisted acquisition services in GSA. It was from that very small cadre of, you know, sort of design types. And now we do all kinds of IT and professional services acquisitions for other federal agencies. So after I graduated from Tech, I came back to that same group and I became one of those project managers doing the assisted acquisition and really supporting other federal agencies. So very early on, I was sitting with the Army, you know, in Fort Belvoir, and I was going to EPA out in San Francisco. And then eventually I started to support the Army and the Air Force in Europe. So a lot of different exposure to a lot of different agencies very early on. And that's what I really liked about that organization.
I know when I graduated from college, I thought I wanted to be A and ended up following a path to B and ended up turning out better than the original plan. So when you were faced with, you know, hey, what do I want to do? And also your skill set probably wasn't exactly matched with the challenge in front of you. What did you do to help prepare? I mean, if you're a young person out there listening to you right now, what advice would you have?
So I had a really interesting experience when I did come back permanently. It took me about 9 months after I graduated to call them back and say, "Hey, you know, I haven't found what I wanted to do yet. Would you take me back?" And they did. And the boss that I had at the time would take me to every meeting he went to. And he, yes, and I wasn't really sure why I was there.
That was a great boss.
It was a great boss. And I'm just listening and I'm absorbing. And so this went on for a long time. And he was really taking me to all the different agencies that we supported. And, you know, I got to just participate and listen. And one day on the way to one of these meetings, he said, "You're going to give the presentation." And really freaked me out, quite frankly. He said, "Look, I'm with you. If you need support, I will help you. But you've heard me say this so many times. You could say this in your sleep, whether you realize it or not." And so that opportunity gave me so much confidence after that meeting went well. You know, it was a very casual kind of conversation with a friendly client. So he knew what kind of situation he was putting me into, and he knew that he'd be there to support me, you know, if I needed it. And that really just gave me the confidence to say, "This is, I love doing what we're doing. I believe in it. I think now I kind of know what we're doing, and I could probably, you know, continue to contribute and be part of this organization," and really kind of had fun with it. So that was really, really critical, I think, for me.
So, Mary, the average job tenure in America is just over 4 years, and, you know, it's getting shorter, not getting longer. You've been at GSA for over 25 years. So why so long? And were you ever tempted to leave at any point?
Yeah, I've had different jobs in GSA. So the project management job and the FedSIM job, I was there probably about 10 years. And then I was asked to help sort of shape a potential new organization in GSA. It was like a marketing and sales kind of function that we had never done before. And I was kind of put forward for that. And so that lasted, you know, again, another few years. But that also led to my senior executive service position, because I was now exposed to people all over the country in GSA, different agencies, as well as the leadership. The marketing and sales I did for probably 4 or 5 years, and then went back to run all of assisted acquisition services when FAS was created. And now I've been at ITS for about 5 years. And so, yeah, you know, I've thought about, is this what I want to do forever? But I will tell you what, I've had so much fun. And the fact that we get to spend time with every federal agency, essentially. I've traveled, you know, to Germany to support military. I've traveled all over the United States. We get to support, you know, the presidential administrations. We support OMB. We look at, you know, IT and acquisition. We get to shape policy. We implement it. We work with so many different people in industry that, you know, as long as I'm challenged, learning, growing, and working for and with really great people and having fun, I haven't really, you know, had sort of the desire to leave. I've never, as you know, never planned my career out, and maybe someday I will go to another agency before I, you know, retire. But we'll just have to see. I'm having a great time, and that's just, I've got a great kind of work-life balance in GSA. So it's just, that's all really important to me and has done, I think, done really well for myself and what I need.
We're speaking with Mary Davey, Assistant Commissioner GSA. Coming up, we'll ask Mary about her current role at GSA. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, we're talking with Mary Davey, Assistant Commissioner, GSA.
So, Mary, you're responsible for $23 billion in government acquisitions. It's an incredible responsibility when you think about it. Often, the federal government gets criticized for being too slow and too cumbersome, particularly with regard to doing acquisitions. And it seems like with technology acquisitions, especially. So talk about some of the GSA programs that you've put in place and you're working on that will continue to streamline and improve the whole acquisition process.
Yeah, so GSA has sort of a variety of offerings for federal agencies. And ITS is known for like the Schedule 70 program, which is our largest. About $15 billion in IT products and services flow through Schedule 70. There's 4,700 contracts in that program. We have our government-wide acquisition contracts, Alliant, Alliant Small Business, Vets, 8A Stars. You know, that's another $5 billion a year. The telecommunications program, the identity management program, we have cloud, federal bridge. So pretty much anything IT people can get. And then we move up sort of into, we'll help an agency with, you know, a scope review or provide a template or even just help them navigate, you know, which contract would I use, you know, for this particular need. Then you can go all the way up to assisted acquisition services and then things that we call shared services where GSA is actually kind of the front end of the solution and we support the agency on the back end. So US Access is one of those. An agency just gets their PIV cards through us. They don't have to do an acquisition every time they need to badge, you know, somebody or if a new agency comes on. So very different models. But what we also recognize is with technology, you're right, you know, it changes so quickly. How can you make sure that through that whole process that agencies have to go through, I need to figure out what I want to buy, then, you know, who might I buy it from, and how do I conduct a fair competition and then evaluate it and then actually get something going, often can take a really long time. So we're doing a lot of things to sort of help address that. One is on the schedules program. We want to make it easier for companies to do business with us. So there is a requirement right now in schedules that a company has had to have been in business for 2 years before they can get a schedule. And we recognize that with some new companies or even some people that have been around the government space for a really long time or just, you know, working a really long time, have a lot of experience and things to offer. So we have taken away that 2 year. Actually, we've created alternative language. And so that will help get, you know, more new emerging companies and technology on schedule. We've created what we call the fast lane to get new emerging products on schedule faster so that the turnaround's like 48 hours instead of sometimes weeks and months to get products added and even new companies added. So we're really looking at, you know, how to get the offerings on faster, but then also what support can we give to the agencies to help them move through that process faster. So it is support, it's templates, and now with the new acquisition gateway and those category hallways, agencies will have access to all kinds of different other agency contracts, templates, best practices, white papers, spend data, you know, prices paid. So a lot of work going on, especially in the IT field, because you do need to, you know, address things faster.
Mary, one of the things I've noticed lately is how great, you know, GSA has done in embracing social media and bringing, you know, information to serve the stakeholders, both government and private sector, like you're talking about. It's not only these tools that are available, but you're doing it constantly through social media. Can you tell us a little bit about that strategy and why?
Yeah, so this is a funny story. When I was in AAS, and this was probably, gosh, what's 7-8 years ago now. And, you know, Facebook had just sort of come into be a couple years before. My kids were on Facebook. I'm like, you know, I'm going to join Facebook and find out what's going on. Well, I ended up seeing my circle of friends on Facebook. So I'm like, I don't even care what the kids are doing anymore. You know, this is my group. And so I thought, well, why not create like an internal page for the assisted acquisition services folks? Because they were all over the United States. And we had people in Germany, people in Hawaii, you know, everywhere. And I thought we could just create a nice little Facebook page to, you know, get a group together. And if you want to join, you can. You don't have to, but it might be a way to establish connections. And then with the Obama administration, with the open and transparent government policy, I thought, well, why couldn't we figure out how to do that across government with the buying community? So we used a platform like GovLoop, you know, to connect federal, state, local, academia, industry, you know, in the acquisition community. And then we started to look at other platforms to be more open and transparent with acquisition. So we were using Twitter. We used a wiki to develop the requirements for data.gov. And the funniest part was, you know, the acquisition community, who's normally used to doing things in sort of a sequential, almost a closed process, got really nervous about it. Like I said, we're going to tweet the procurement status of, you know, this acquisition. I'm like, well, what if someone tweets me back? I'm like, well, we'll figure out how to answer it. And so we went through all that. We worked with the lawyers. You know, we worked with the IG. We worked with the labor unions. You know, what does this mean to us now as government employees using social media? And so GSA at this time was also working, you know, terms and conditions. Can we actually put stuff on Facebook because, you know, there's advertisements? And does that mean the agency's then promoting that product or, you know, service? So we had to work through all of that. But I think we, you know, since have picked up on, like, we use Interact, which is a platform where there's hundreds, if not thousands, of communities that GSA hosts for all kinds of things across the agency. And I think it's just a really important, powerful tool to reach a lot of people, you know, around the world. I've established connections with people in the UK and Australia in the procurement field, and just the relationships and the ability to have that reach and that connection and, you know, get your message out, but also get a lot of information in. So it's just been, I think, incredible and a really powerful tool.
That's amazing. Now, one of the biggest challenges is there's just so much out there that you can, you know, touch. And so if you were somebody who just wanted to learn about Fastlane, or a vendor out there who wanted to get a GSA schedule, how would you recommend they start to connect to this community and get this information online?
The first thing I would say is gsa.gov/technology. So you'll find everything in the technology arena that GSA offers. And that includes, you know, things like an 18F and OCSIT. Some of the OGP side of the policy that they put in place that impact our technology offerings. And then if you go to interact.gsa.gov, you can search through different communities. So if you're interested, like, on telecommunications and network services, you could, you know, search on that, or the GWAC program, you know, especially if you're industry and you're looking at new business opportunities, those kinds of things. I have a blog, Great Government Through Technology, and we talk about different programs in a very regular manner and things that are going on. So you're right, there's a lot of ways to connect with us, and it can potentially be overwhelming, but I think, you know, gsa.gov/technology is probably at least a good starting point.
Today we're talking with Mary Davey, Assistant Commissioner, GSA. Mary, so, you know, we hear the term public-private partnership in Washington all the time, applied to a variety of different things, but when I think about it, your organization really relies on an effective public-private partnership because, as we were just talking about, you've got a various set of stakeholders, right? You've got all the different agencies, and you've got all the private industry as well. So what do you think, what have you found has really made it work so well and be so effective?
I think it's the openness and the communication, which, you know, leads to trust. And you're right, we deal with hundreds and thousands of individuals from different companies and then within the agencies. And so my staff knows that it's really important. And what I say is share as much as you can with anybody, as you know, at any time. Now, obviously, during, you know, something's in procurement, you're not going to be able to share a whole lot, but you still can share. You can say, this is where we are. You know, we're in evaluations. This is when we, you know, intend to maybe make an award, whatever that is. And so, you know, we say industry partner, and that, of course, has different connotations depending on the way you look at things. But we are, in my group, we are providing access to private sector solutions. So it's very important that we also understand, you know, what drives that particular company or that industry, you know, where's that market going? How can we make sure that those products and services are not only what agencies are buying, but what's going to be offered? You know, looking out 10 years in the technology world is a little daunting, but when you're putting in place these large IDIQ contracts that are 10 years in length, you have to really say, okay, what do we know about what's happening today? But then how do we anticipate the future and the unknown? And it really is putting in some of that flexibility and the opportunity to add, you know, new companies, new technology in the future. But again, it's being open, it's inviting input in, comment, you know, criticism, whatever that needs to be, so that we can try to do the best that we can with the information we have to make sure that the government's going to be able to get what it needs. So I think it's just the open, you know, be honest, create that relationship, because that's just going to benefit everybody.
I remember a few years ago, as you guys were starting to do a bunch of the as a service contracts, and as a vendor, we weren't quite sure what those were all about, how they were going to be different. And the team at GSA was so great about sitting down and talking to us and getting input. And it really felt like a collaborative process, mm-hmm. which is very different from years and years ago.
Yeah, it has to be, you know, especially, you're right, with the infrastructure as a service and the email as a service, we were being asked to really think differently about how to buy the stuff, right? Because the contracts we have in place today are largely labor category based. Well, I keep saying you're not going to buy cloud really through labor categories. So with infrastructure as a service, you know, we came up with things like you can buy by the lot, or you can buy storage, you know, by the drink essentially, or buy a mailbox or a number of mailboxes. So the government is trying to really, I think, shift from sort of the legacy way of thinking of the way that we bought legacy technology, and the acquisition process really has to change with that as well.
You know, Mary, to get an organization to change, to shift into that open approach to things, how would you describe your leadership? I mean, clearly that has a lot to do with it.
I'm a very open person. So I think people, you know, I kind of set the example for the team, and I continue to promote and probably make promises that make the staff a little bit uncomfortable about things that we'll do. And so, for instance, we had the Enterprise Infrastructure Solutions contract. You know, it was, the RFP was let in October. Proposals were due on February 22nd, I believe. And we had a protest the day before proposals were due. And I said, you know what, we are going to publicize the protest. We'll put it out there on the Interact site, and we'll let people read what this company believes the merits of this protest are, so that others can understand, you know, what's been protested. Otherwise, you just say, well, we've got a protest. And people are like, oh, you know, what does that mean? And maybe I should protest. And what are they protesting? So I just try to be as open and transparent as possible and ensure that the staff is acting in the same manner, because I'm one person in a 675 person organization. We do $23 billion. We support every federal agency. And so the whole staff has to, you know, that machine has to move in the same direction. And they have. They've really done a tremendous job with some of these really large procurements and just being as open as possible and getting as much input from industry and other federal agencies along the way.
We're speaking with Mary Davey, Assistant Commissioner, GSA. Coming up, we'll ask Mary about mentors in her career. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Mary Davey, Assistant Commissioner, GSA.
So, Mary, we talk about mentorship quite a bit on Women of Washington. And I know when you were talking about starting your career, you talked about some early influences. Talk about mentorship along your career and how important that's been.
It's been really important. And, you know, it still is even after 25 plus years. And I think it's important from sort of a bi-directional way. So I've had the luxury of having some really good mentors that were both formal and informal, you know, throughout my career. And so recognizing the benefit that that's given me, I want to make sure that I also give that back to others. And we support a lot of our folks going through many different professional development programs. And then around the agency as well, we're often asked, you know, can I shadow you for a day, or can I come and do an executive interview with you? And I try to make myself as available as possible, because I really, truly believe in sort of the power of that. And then you just have that connection and that relationship. And for me early on, you know, as, you know, coming in as a GS4 and having the benefit of bosses who also acted as mentors because they understood the importance of that, you know, it really kind of stuck with me and struck me that, you know, you need to be able to do that if you want to grow a workforce and you want people to be able to step in behind you and really lead the organization. And so it's just, it kind of was natural to me because I'm also a people person and, you know, I like to have relationships with people and just, be available and be part of the team, probably because I started off as, you know, somebody so young in the organization. And so I try to give a lot of my team members that same sort of opportunity and other people throughout the agency as well. And then even outside of the agency, I get asked sometimes to, you know, can you come have lunch with this person? I think you'd really, you know, help them. And so I try to do that where I can as well.
Is there a particular piece of advice that you've been given in your career that you find yourself now repeating as you are mentoring young people?
One of the things that I tell people is don't be afraid to raise your hand and volunteer for something, even if you think maybe it's outside of your skill level, your comfort zone, whatever it is. If you believe you've got the support of somebody behind you, go for it. And that's kind of what happened to me, you know, when I mentioned kind of moving from the Assisted Acquisition Services Group into that CRM and sales organization. I was plucked and said, hey, we need four people. You're going to be one of these four, and you get to go off and sort of create this potential new organization and see if it's going to be something that's viable for GSA. I had no idea what I was being asked to do, but I knew that the leadership that had selected me would be there to help me if I needed it. And they absolutely were. And so, you know, I just sort of said, okay, well, this is the opportunity I've been given. This is the task at hand and might as well just go for it and see what happens. I mean, how bad could it be? The worst thing that's going to happen is I'll go back to doing what I was doing. And that's, I love that job. So, you know, I always say, just don't be afraid to sort of step out and take a risk and try something new. You'll meet new people. You'll, you know, get new opportunities in front of you. And that has just, so I've always been sort of the first to raise my hand for almost anything. And I'll try it. So also, you know, when you do that, you get to kind of help shape what happens. So you're not just waiting for something to happen to you. You might get to say, guess what we're going to do? And I got to sort of help develop that. So that's fun as well.
Mary, I know in speaking to you earlier, you know, you and I have something similar. About mid-career, I was being considered for executive leadership and was given an executive coach. And I understand you had the same experience. Can you tell us about that?
I did. So in that little four-person group, GSA was, I don't know if it was smart enough or I was just lucky enough, but they decided to give us an executive coach, each one of the four of us. And it was also a group that was helping us sort of facilitate these discussions that had to take place around the country to determine if, you know, this new organization was something that was going to be good for GSA. So I had really early kind of, you know, again, exposure to strong mentor leadership and training. And the executive coach, I was in a place where I was acting in this new organization, which ended up coming to be. And then I became the deputy to the SES in that organization. And then she was sent off to do, you know, a special project for the administrator. As FTS and FSS were merging into FAS, she was being put on a team to sort of help create that. So I had to step into now an acting senior executive role and be at the table with the rest of the leadership team and, you know, move that organization forward. So I really relied on that executive coach to help me through to say, how do I interact with this leadership team, you know, when I'm not a senior executive, but I'm expected, you know, to be at the table and to just keep the organization, you know, rolling. So I ended up using that coach for probably 10 years just because I felt that it was, you know, almost like a sounding board. And as I moved through different positions in my career, I had new challenges and I found that person to just be extremely helpful to kind of rely on and bounce things off of and help me, you know, really sort of frame my thinking to make some tough decisions in some cases. So I have found executive coaching to be, you know, extremely valuable as well. And even today, you know, every once in a while, I'll call on that person and say, hey, this is going on. You know, can you help me kind of think through it?
So besides executive coaching, you also have been very, very active in a couple of organizations. I think IAC.
Yep.
Why?
So I started in the ACT IAC organization back in 2003 in a professional development program, the Partners Program. And again, you know, get to work with a lot of different people across government and industry. And then I saw what that organization was trying to accomplish. And it really was about bringing industry and government closer together to improve IT acquisition. And so what I wanted to do was figure out how else can I contribute to this organization because I believed in what they were trying to do. And plus, I was getting some great relationships. And so just staying with that organization and now in my position, you know, that group, you have CIOs from across government, acquisition people. So I have a lot of the personal relationships I have with these people throughout government because of organizations like that and, you know, Women in Technology and other organizations where you just get to, you know, be around those people. And again, it's all about trust, relationships, and that's so critical to the job that I do. But again, you know, I just have a lot of fun in those kind of organizations.
Today we're talking with Mary Davey, Assistant Commissioner GSA. Mary, you've worked your entire career, as we've talked about, with the federal government. And it's important that the government be able to recruit the best and the brightest graduates coming out of colleges so that we end up with executives like you. We sometimes hear that the government has a hard time competing, trying to get new recruits in from the graduates, particularly with the millennials coming along and some of their expectations around, you know, the fact that they rely, you know, they want to be able to telework completely and they, you know, want to be able to have all their technology in their job. So, you know, how is GSA dealing with that recruiting issue?
We're actually going at it for full force. And a few years ago, we spent a lot of time recruiting at colleges, which they are doing again today. And what we did is we had like 30 positions for people right out of college. And we had over 100 some applicants. And we were talking about, you know, the mission that we have and all the things that I've talked about that excited me, right? You get to work with different agencies. You get to work on some important administration initiatives. And we got, I mean, in 3 years, three classes of 30 really super sharp young people. And we gave them all kinds of professional development training. They got rotational assignments, including around the country and different parts of GSA to get, you know, to learn about different kinds of work that we do to see what might interest them eventually. There was a program management cadre. There was a contracting office cadre. And I mean, we even gave them, you know, here's how you dress in a professional environment. Had fun with them. And they got mentors throughout that as well. And they got put on teams where they worked on projects that, you know, were briefing the GSA administrator and the FAS commissioner. So I think that really excited them because they felt like, you know, they were contributing in a pretty significant way and impacting the rest of government, which is true. So while the hiring process can be a little slow and daunting, we've also really taken some steps to try to make it clearer and easier for a younger person coming out of college to figure out, you know, where do I even start if I want to work for the federal government? How do I even, you know, apply? So a lot of the college recruiting and just, you know, trying to handhold people through that and make sure we get the best and brightest. We've had great success, you know, in that kind of program, and have had most of them have stayed and, you know, have been there now, some of them 7 and 8 years, which is, you know, kind of hard to believe.
You mentioned that you're starting to do this again. If I'm a young listener out there just graduating from school, how do I find out about this program?
As I said, the GSA Human Resources Group, there's somebody that's dedicated to, you know, the folks that are in college. And so they're recruiting at different campuses. And probably, you know, you could always say you go to USA Jobs, but that becomes daunting as well. But I would say, you know, looking at GSA's website, we do have a GSA Jobs and here's what's available. And then there's some information, you know, for people that are still in college or people that have just graduated as well.
So let me turn that question around. So when you're looking at recruits, what are you looking for? What they studied, you know, what is a perfect recruit for somebody that you'd want to have into that program?
For me, it's all about sort of the energy and, you know, I want to get in and sort of learn what's going on. So it's not as much about, you know, what degree do you have? What did you study? At this moment in time, you know, are you going to be happy doing what you're doing? And are you going to be able to at least contribute in a way? And can we help you develop? So if somebody comes in and, you know, they've got a lot of energy and just passion and want to be part of the team, I'll take you. You know, we can train you to do just about anything. And, you know, we've seen some of the younger ones, they want to move around, but they will stay within the agency. And quite frankly, I think GSA is probably at the top of the agencies that have cool technology. I mean, you know, we're on Gmail and we have Google Chat and you can do video chat and we've all got, you know, we're all just very mobile. There's wireless all over the building. The telework is, you know, extensive. And it's just about what is your, not only your output, but your outcome. If you're getting your job done, you could probably do your job, you know, from just about anywhere. And the managers that like me that have been around for a while, they're getting very comfortable with sort of this dynamic and fluid environment. And I think that's attractive to these folks as well.
We're speaking with Mary Davey, Assistant Commissioner GSA. Coming up, we'll find out what Mary likes to do when she's not working. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we're talking with Mary Davey, Assistant Commissioner, GSA.
So, Mary, I know that your job is pretty all-encompassing and time-consuming, but what do you like to do when you're not working?
Anything outdoors. And I'm an avid cyclist. I like to, you know, road bike, mountain bike, just casual bike, whatever I can do. Anything sort of outside, you know, kayaking, hiking, even just, you know, walking around the city. So that's probably where my biggest sort of passion and energy comes from, you know, in terms of just sort of personal motivation. But I also have a lot of interest in, you know, music and live music, and have a lot of friends and even family in the music business and are musicians, including my 22-year-old, almost 23-year-old son. And so he, you know, he picked up the guitar when he was four. And there was a time where I was actually taking a master's program, and I was sitting on the couch, and he was probably six. And I'm, you know, pecking away at the computer, trying to get my work done. And he comes up with his guitar in his hand. And he says, "Mom, I have written a song about you." And I said, "Okay." So I kind of, you know, shut the laptop and I looked at him. He said, "It's called 'The Computer Is Me.'" And I went, "Uh-oh." You know, so here I was trying to get all this, you know, work done and then support the kids with the sports and all that stuff. And so that kind of woke me up. But, you know, he still has, he's picked up the guitar when he was, you know, three or four and still doing it. So we've got a lot of friends and family, and spend a lot of time with the musicians, and just, you know, out enjoying live music as well.
So does he do that professionally?
He does. He's a full-time guitar player, and just, he's blues and rock. So, you know, he's 23-year-old and from the Washington, D.C. area, who's trying to, you know, just keep the blues alive, if you will.
That's great. That's great. And you mentioned cycling. Is that something that you do competitively, or you just like to do it for fun?
It's for fun, but, you know, there can be some little friendly competition going on with you're out with the certain people that I ride with that like to just, you know, and it's fun because we'll push each other. But yeah, no, nothing like formal or competitive, but just out to, you know, get exercise. But it's also very social.
You know, so many of the women that we talk to have hobbies that are just completely different than what they do during the day. And what they usually say is that that helps to balance things out. It seems that to me that cycling could be a great stress reliever.
It really is. And when we had offices in Fairfax, which is about 12 miles from my house, I was able to actually bike into work a few times. And that was just, it was a lot of fun because it took me the same amount of time to go 12 miles on the bike as it did sitting in traffic. And I wasn't frustrated with the traffic, and I was outdoors and doing something that I loved. And so that was really, you know, I looked forward, you know, to getting on that bike and going into work in the morning and knowing I got to ride it home as well.
I loved your story about your son. That is hysterical.
It was. And, you know, I thought, uh-oh.
I understand you have even gone to his concerts and sold T-shirts, or can we find you there?
Yes. And actually, I have been the what they call the merch girl, right? Selling T-shirts and CDs for other bands that I support. So it's that, again, you talk about something completely different where people are walking up and asking you about the CD and that CD and the music. And that's just something that I love. So I can talk about that, too, all day long. And then I'm thinking to myself, if they only knew what I did during the day, they wonder why I'm sitting here selling T-shirts.
$23 billion business by day and at night a rock groupie.
Yeah,
I love it.
If I can make a musician $300 or $400 through merchandise sales, I felt like I've done something.
Now, Mary, you have had such a successful career with all these competing priorities in your lives. Women often have to make hard choices. Have you been ever faced to that? And how did you make those hard choices?
You know, it's funny. I knew, even like I had my first child when I was 24 and my career was just getting started. But I really wanted to work. And it wasn't because I wanted to be away. It's because I love the environment. I love to learn. I love to, you know, be part of something and have that interaction. So I knew I wasn't going to be a stay-at-home mom, but I also knew that, you know, I needed to be there for the kids in school, and they were in all kinds of different sports. So I was always trying to make sure I could be, you know, taking them to practice, being the assistant coach where I could help on their teams. And so it really was, you know, how do I continue to just advance myself so that I continued to be challenged and to learn and to be interested in what I was doing, but also make sure that, you know, I had that balance with the kids. And like, you know, the story with the master's program, I really, really wanted to get a master's degree, but I knew working full time and with two young kids, it was going to be tough. So I did it all online for 2 years. And then, you know, I was traveling a little bit. So I was really trying to balance, you know, how much do I travel and really try to go out there with the career while also making sure I was taking care of the kids the right way. And I think, you know, I guess I did a decent job. You know, they're good kids. They're grown now. And good things are happening. So it just, you always look back and you say, well, I could have done this different, or maybe I should have done that differently. But, you know, you just do what you think is right at the time and kind of go with your gut, really.
You know, the flexibility in the work schedule, a lot of, you know, one of the biggest challenges of getting women in that C-suite is they kind of fall off mid-tier level. Mm-hmm. And many have named that it's difficulty with that balance. The government has a much higher percentage of women at that C-suite level, executive level. Do you think the flexibility in the schedule makes a difference to allow that very diverse, rich pool of great talent like yourself to be in that C-suite?
I think it could. I think it depends on the job and probably the working environment. You know, at GSA, I had a lot of flexibility, but part of it, too, is I was responsible for supporting a bunch of different agencies. And so it was kind of up to me to figure out how to spend the time to do that and when I needed to be on site with somebody versus when, you know, I could just do it from a different location. And so we did have and still do a lot of flexibility in that. And I think that's been really very helpful. But also just, you know, whenever I looked at the next potential job for me in GSA, and I really never thought too far in advance about it, when I was approached for the AAS job and for ITS, I really didn't hesitate to say yes. Part of it was I probably didn't really know what I was getting into. But I also thought, you know, well, why not? I've been in this current job for 4 years. It's time maybe to try something different. But I was also wanting to make sure that whatever position I took, I was going to be a good fit for it, right? Am I going to be the right person to lead this group of people at this time? Do I have the right skills? You know, do I have what the leadership wants to make whatever happen happen? So it was much less about, you know, a promotion or an opportunity and more about, am I going to be happy doing this? Am I going to, you know, have fun? And am I going to be good for the organization and the people? But I think, and probably because GSA is so diverse in, you know, different career paths and career opportunities, that that may have helped also, especially, you know, with some of the leadership positions for women.
So, Mary, if you were to go back to your younger self, what piece of advice would you give her to help her aspire to the success level that you've been able to, both personally and professionally?
The first thing I would say is I look back now and I see a lot of my neighbor's kids, for instance, and even my sister that got to live a semester overseas in college. I would say, you know, you probably really want to get some sort of experience like that. I see that and I see just what it leads them to and different ways of, you know, thinking about opportunities, and not even after college, you know, I might go live in Ireland and work or something. And that's what you hear from them. And then really the thing that has served me well is just, you know, kind of raising that hand and not being afraid to say yes and step out there and just kind of take a personal risk almost to try something different.
Today in the studio, we've been talking with Mary Davey from GSA. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.